If you like titles to your message, then call this one Murder. Murder, He Wrote. So I want to take you to Matthew 5 with these words. You have heard that it was said to those of old, you shall not murder, and whoever murders will be in danger of the judgment. But I say to you that whoever is angry with his brother without a cause shall be in danger of the judgment. And whoever says to his brother, Raca, empty-headed fool, is basically what that means. Whoever says, Raca, shall be in danger of the council, going before the high court or the Sanhedrin. But whoever says, you fool, shall be in danger of hellfire. Therefore, if you bring your gift to the altar and there remember that your brother has something against you, leave your gift there before the altar and go your way. First be reconciled to your brother and then come and offer your gift. We already took the offering, so it's too late for that, isn't it? So you're safe for this week. Years ago, I had two roommates, and they were doing a Bible study with a group of prisoners. So they went into the prison every week for the Bible study. And one day, one of the gentlemen who was there, he said, you know, everybody has murder in their hearts. The only difference is that you're on the outside and I'm on the inside. The difference is that I acted out. But every one of us has murder in our hearts, and you know it as well as I. I'll never forget those words, and neither did they. We couldn't stop talking about it. So I want to take you then back to perhaps one of the most unedifying stories you're ever going to come across. And it's the story of the first homicide, the first murder, and as probably we all know, it's a story about a fratricide, brother on brother. A brother by the name of Cain kills his brother Abel. This is the story after Adam and Eve have been kicked out, evicted from Eden. This is the continuing story, the saga of their family, and it's not a pretty picture. Now, Adam knew Eve, his wife. In other words, they came together in the most intimate possible way. And she conceived and bore Cain. And she said, I have acquired a man from the Lord. Well, that's probably a pun in the original language. In Hebrew, it's probably a pun, and that's where we get the name Cain. It probably sounds a lot like that. Acquiring a man. She obtained him from the Lord. But what Eve knows is that it's God who gave her the gift of a son. She at least understands that much. It's God who is behind it or beyond it. He's the one who causes her to be able to conceive. And then she bore again, this time his brother Abel. Abel, the name there means vanity. It's like a vapor. If on a cold day you breathe out and the vapor dissipates quickly, that's what the name Abel actually means. And we know from the story that he really didn't live very long. It was a short life. Now, Abel was a keeper of sheep, but Cain, he was a tiller of the ground. And what they're doing actually is fulfilling their vocation. That was the assignment given to Adam and Eve. They were supposed to till the earth and make it fertile. They were also supposed to practice what we might have called years ago animal husbandry, to care for the creatures of the earth. So they kind of divided duties. Cain was a farmer and Abel was a shepherd. And so the story continues. And in the process of time, it came to pass that Cain brought an offering of the fruit of the ground to the Lord. Well, that's kind of interesting to me because he was willing to do it. Every indication is that it was voluntary. God, we're not told, required this, but Cain apparently wanted to bring an offering. Yeah, he's the one who instigated this. And then his younger brother, Abel, copied that. Abel also brought of the firstborn of his flock and of their fat. It seems like Abel was the one who brought the very best that he had. He brought the cream off the top. Cain, we can't be sure, but he did bring an offering, and he was the one who started it. And so that's how things continue. Well, unfortunately, their worship leads to some difficult repercussions, because we're told that the Lord respected Abel and his offering, but he did not respect Cain and his offering. He didn't just reject the offering, but if you read that, and if I understand it accurately, he's saying he also rejected Cain. Now, why would God do that? You see, this is a rather capricious God, or he's acting in a very strange manner. Why would God do that? And Cain was very angry. Wouldn't you be? How does it feel to be rejected? He wasn't just rejected. If you have a boss at work, it's one thing for them to criticize and say, you didn't do that very well. It would be another thing if they called you a fool or you idiot. Can't you ever get anything right? You see, you up the ante. And it's interesting that God didn't just reject the offering of Cain, but he also rejected Cain. So what's going on here? This particular story raises more questions than it actually answers, and it certainly raises some very serious questions about God. So the Lord said to Cain, "Why are you angry?" Well, it's a good thing God already knows the answer, because Cain, like, are you got to be kidding me? You just dissed my offering. You just told me that I'm worthless, and now you wonder why I'm angry? Come on. Why do you think, God? And why has your countenance fallen? Why do you have a long face? Why are you looking so downcast and dejected? Duh, God, figure it out. You can just imagine how Cain would be angry. And then God adds this. It almost sounds like adding insult to injury or grinding salt or something into the wound. If you do well, will you not be accepted? Oh, thanks a lot. What do you mean? I thought I did well. I'm the one who brought an offering. I'm the one who started this. Why isn't that acceptable to you? What's wrong, God? And so the story continues. If you do well, will you not be accepted? And that's an open question that God poses unto Cain. And then comes the threat or the warning. If you do not do well, sin lies at the door. What's that mean? Well, it means it's close at hand and it's not very far away. And its desire is for you, but you should rule over it. Now, that word desire has been used before, and it's a distorted, a perverted desire. It means something like raging lust. And this is the sort of desire that destroys not only the subject of the desire, but also the host, the one who has that feeling. So it's like a ravenous wolf at the door. It will destroy. But, and this is where God tells Cain, you should rule over it. Some translations are even stronger than that. They say you must rule over it. You absolutely must overcome this. So here's Cain. He's furious. He's been rejected. His offering has not been received. And God is telling him that he has to rise above the anger. Not going to be easy. Well, the story continues. Now Cain talked with Abel, his brother, and it came to pass, so apparently it wasn't in that moment, but it came to pass later on when they were in the field that Cain rose up against Abel, his brother, and killed him. Why did he do that? Why would he be jealous? Okay, possibly. And then the Lord said to Cain, "Where is Abel, your brother?" Don't you love it when God shows up and asks those questions? God turns into the investigator, the one to interrogate, and he already knows. It's not as if God doesn't know the answer. The Lord said to Cain, "Where is Abel, your brother?" And he's looking to see, I think, how Cain's going to respond. He said, "I do not know." Oh, yes, he does. "I do not know. Am I my brother's keeper?" There's that famous question. Am I my brother's keeper? And he said, "What have you done?" Well, the first thing that Cain has done now, he committed the crime, and now he lies to cover it up. And so what you discover, you might remember how it was with Adam. Adam had to be persuaded to take the fruit. He had to be persuaded to sin. Take, Adam, come on, go ahead. So Adam had to be persuaded. And when God caught up with him, Adam was found hiding, but he told the truth. He was petulant. He didn't really want to do it. He was ashamed, but he told the truth. When God presses Cain, "Where is Abel, your brother?" What does Cain do? He lies. So you see, everything is declining. Everything is being downgraded. He's a more hardened sinner than Adam was. And so it continues. "What have you done?" God tells him, "The voice of your brother's blood cries out to me from the ground. So now you are cursed from the earth." If you thought making a living as a farmer was tough before, now it's about to get harder. "The earth which has opened its mouth to receive your brother's blood from your hand. When you till the ground, it shall no longer yield its strength to you." Uh-oh, this is serious. "A fugitive and a vagabond, you shall be on the earth. What a sentence. Because what God is doing is cutting him off from others. And if life, and I think we understand this from looking at Genesis, the opening chapters here, God is all about life and bringing people together. He's all about relationships and how things fit together in harmony. And so to remove Cain from that, to turn him into a fugitive and to send him away, means that he's cutting him off socially and relationally. And Cain said to the Lord, "My punishment," and he knew, "my punishment is greater than I can bear. Surely you have driven me this day, or driven me out this day from the face of the ground. I shall be hidden from your face." And that's the worst punishment of all. Because at this point, God speaks with Cain. They haven't lost contact. We've never had what Cain and Abel had, much less Adam and Eve. But at this point, Cain is being thrust away from God and sent away as a vagabond. "And it will happen that anyone who finds me will kill me." It's interesting that as Cain makes this particular appeal to God, he protests, but there's no remorse for the killing. There's none. He's just wondering, well, what about me? What's going to happen to me? Other people will kill me. Well, gee, Cain, it would have been nice if you'd thought about that before you beat on your brother Abel. But there's no apparent remorse for that. It's just, what's going to happen to me? But even so, watch God's response. "And the Lord said to him, therefore, whoever kills Cain, vengeance shall be taken on him sevenfold." And you thought God was fair? Oh, I don't know. God promises something to Cain. Whoever does this will inherit a sevenfold vengeance. And apparently, God will be the one to instigate that. "And the Lord set a mark on Cain," maybe it was a tattoo, "lest anyone finding him should kill him." So Cain receives this mark, and apparently it was a warning to others. It was a sign of his guilt. Remember reading some of us Nathaniel Hawthorne's book, The Scarlet Letter? So I have no idea what the mark was. We don't know. But he left some kind of mark that others could recognize, telling them to avoid Cain, make sure no harm comes to him. It was a sign of guilt, but it was also, the flip side, a sign of grace, because God did not take the life of Cain. Cain was punished, but he wasn't exempted from a future. And at this point, as things kind of go downhill, if you were to read a little bit further, I think one of the reasons that God sent Cain away, because there was a question, what would happen if Cain killed again? He's already done it once. The second time is perhaps easier than the first. The thresholds have already given way. So if I let Cain remain in the company of others, there's a possibility that he could kill again, and that the second time it would be easier than the first, and that would just have a ripple effect on others. Well, it actually does have a ripple effect on the descendants of Cain, because he has, in his line, you find a man named Lamech, and he's a man who threatens vengeance on somebody else 70 times 7, or 77 times stronger than Cain's. So he becomes even more vindictive than Cain was, and it just gets worse and worse. This was a man who took for himself two wives, and so polygamy gets introduced as well. So you just see this downhill. Everything is going downhill at this point. So let me make a few remarks and as we think about this for just a moment. You know, I have to say it this way this morning, and I just want to make it clear that, and perfectly clear, that Cain asks what I think is the most, or the second most important question in the world. And then the question there is in Genesis 4:9. We've all heard it. Am I my brother's keeper? Am I my brother's keeper? My sister's keeper? Am I? Well, let me give a clear and unequivocal answer. This is my answer, and I think it's the biblical answer. The answer is yes, yes, and emphatically yes. You absolutely are your sister's keeper. I am my brother's keeper. That's the biblical call. And if you don't get it, then we need to read the story again. That is the biblical answer with no prevarication. It's an emphatic yes. We are to care for one another. It is not a rhetorical question. When God poses the question, there is only one answer. It's a question that demands an answer, and even more than that, it actually demands a response. It demands an action plan. So what's the plan for you to respond to the needs of your brother? Are you to care for your brother, to keep your sister? Absolutely. So, well, we say all that, and I just wanted to make it clear because you've got it now. Is that the right answer? Yeah, we're supposed to care for one another. You might be wondering if that's the penultimate question, the number two question. So, Jeff, what's the number one question? What do you think it is? What's the most important question? I think so. What Williams just said. It's a question that was on the lips of Jesus. It's a question that can be found in the Gospel of John. And it's in John 20:15, where after Jesus has been raised from the dead, he finds Peter. And Peter has been dreading, I suspect, that moment. And this is the moment that he has to come clean. And finally, he just has to face Jesus. And Jesus asks him only one question. He doesn't ask him, why did you do it? What does he ask him? Do you love me? Do you love me more than these? Do you love me more than your brothers, than the other disciples? And you know what the answer of Peter was. You know everything, Lord. You know that I love you. You know that I love you more than these. I think Jesus is asking a very simple question. As Lord, he's saying, do you love the Lord with all your heart and mind and soul and strength? And as with Adam, God intends, I think, to be our first and last love. He's not going to be the only love, but he's going to be the very first and the very best and the very last, but not the only one. I do believe, as you read the story of Cain and Abel, that God demands our very best, our utmost. He wants what Abel offered, the first fruits of his labor, the firstborn. That's what God wants, the cream of the crop, the cream off the top. He doesn't want the leftovers, not this God. That's not good enough. He doesn't want to be an afterthought. When you've paid all your other bills, this is what I leave for you. That's not what this God finds acceptable. This is a God who insists on being first, foremost, and finally. This is a God who wants to be at the very center of everything that we do and insist upon it. This is a God who will not finish second. And so this is a God who intends to be our master and for us to be his servants. But let me say this. Oh, what a master this God is. And that's why we have the story of Adam and Eve. What did God give to Adam and Eve? Everything. Everything that they needed. Everything for life. He gave them breath. He gave them birth. He gave them everything. A house, a home, a garden, a park, a place to live in a good neighborhood. He gave them work to do, significant work. This wasn't a bottom feeder job with no future and something less than minimum wage. It wasn't like that. He gave them the most significant job possible. He said, I want you to be my representatives on earth to all the other creatures, to care for this planet that I've given into your care. So he gave them a great responsibility and a great assignment. It was his call. And finally, what else did he give them? His very own presence. He walked in the garden. They could meet up with God. They could chat with God. They could converse together, be together. So he provided for them his own intimate presence. They had absolutely everything. And yet, it still didn't seem to be enough. But God gave them everything. Better to be a servant of the sovereign God than to be a son of Satan, I suppose. But God provided for them absolutely everything that he thought they would ever need and want. And so later on, when Jesus once was asked, what was the greatest commandment? Do you remember how he responded? You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart and mind and soul, with all your strength. And the second is like unto the first. He coupled the two together as if they couldn't be separated. He said, and you shall love your neighbor as yourself. He didn't have to tell them about loving themselves. He just took that for granted that it's something we will all do. There's an instinct of self-preservation inside every one of us. We don't need to be taught to do that. We just do it. It comes automatically. It comes from the moment that we're born. So he's trying to tell them what they really need to do. And then, of course, in the crowd that day, there was a lawyer who provided a clever, lawyerly answer. Who's my neighbor? Well, I'm kind of glad that he posed that question. He probably thought he could escape by just saying, yeah, who's my neighbor? I'm going to get a good laugh from the crowd, then I'll disappear and I'll have the last laugh. But Jesus reached out for those teachable moments, and he wasn't finished. Do you remember what he offered? A story, a parable. What parable did he tell? The Good Samaritan. Who is my neighbor? The Good Samaritan. Am I my brother's keeper? How do you think Jesus would answer that? Probably with a tale about the Good Samaritan. Who's my neighbor? Well, Donna, around here we sometimes ask, who's my neighbor? What do we like to say? Putting her on the spot. Who's my neighbor? Anyone who's not you. Okay. William, who's your neighbor? That gentleman sitting right next to you. Bernie, who's your neighbor? I am. I think Bernie said it well. So you already know the answer, right? Am I my brother's keeper? We know the answer. But let's go just a little bit further. So what's the meaning of life? Well, around here, we think it's to become better lovers, to love God and to love our neighbors, to fall in love with God with all our heart and soul and mind and strength, and to love one another with that very same love with which. And after Jesus, for the story, after he heard his answer, Lord, you know that I love you, what did he tell Peter to do? Feed my sheep. See, you do know the stories. We know those stories. We may not always follow them out, but that's exactly what he told Peter to do. He gave him an assignment, and he said, feed my lambs. Whose lambs are they? Not Peter's. Feed my lambs. They all belong to me. So feed my sheep. Tend my flock. So there can be no uncertainty. Am I my brother's keeper? You better believe it. And remember, too, what Abel was. He was a shepherd. Interesting. He was a shepherd who cared for sheep. So I suppose as you look at the scripture, God's answer couldn't be clearer. And if you were to look at James, James says it this way, true and undefiled religion before God and the Father is to visit widows and orphans, those who are in distress. Deuteronomy 10:19, love the stranger, the alien in your midst. And then God supplied the answer. Why should you do that? He was talking to his own people, the Israelites. For you were strangers once in the land of Egypt yourselves. You were slaves. You know what it was like. I don't want you to treat anybody the way that you were treated. I want you to treat others the way I treat you. So you look around the world today and you talk about President Trump. And he talks about protecting our nation's borders. All I can say is that the people of God are expected to offer fair treatment to aliens, to immigrants, and those who are different, to the refugees. We are expected to do that because of the way that God has welcomed us. By all means, verify. By all means, vet the newcomers if you must. By all means, treat others the way that God has treated you. By all means, treat them the way that you want to be treated in your heart of hearts. And then we get these incredible words from Jesus who says, love your enemies. Well, how do you do that? And the answer is, without the help of God, you can't. But with God's help, all things are possible. We have a God who loved us while we were far off, while we were yet strangers, while we were enemies. God took the approach. He was the one who took the initiative to come after us while we were still lost. And so I think God is looking for a church and for his people to behave in a similar manner. So if you want to know what to do, then this is a particularly powerful story. And I actually think that God, well, I actually think there's a lot of grace in God. I think what happened was that God was looking for a different kind of response from Cain. I think he was setting him up. It was a test. I don't think that God wanted Cain to fail. I think he accepted the offering of one and not the other so that it could become a learning experience for both. And I'm certain that God never intended that Cain would take the life of Abel. So I think he set up this deliberate test just to show them what would happen, to show them, because God understood that sin was loose in the world now. So every one of us is going to have to deal with certain things in life. And what we know is, how many of you think that life is fair? That's kind of what I thought. I don't think even God is fair, but life isn't fair, is it? And so I think God wants us to understand that. Life isn't fair. And so we're going to have to get used to that. Things don't work out the way we always want. Some of us are going to have to face disappointment and loss, and it may be intense. And so God turns away. The offering isn't acceptable, and he even rejects Cain. And so I think God was hoping to build the character of Cain. I think he was trying to call him out. And unfortunately, what Cain didn't do, he didn't ask God, why? Why is my offering unacceptable? I mean, he failed to ask that question. I wish he had. I wish he had just been bold enough. I mean, he didn't back down later. He protested, well, wait a minute, they're going to kill me, God. What about me? But he didn't press in and ask, well, why, God? Why am I unacceptable? Why isn't my offering acceptable? It's not about your brother Abel's. Cain, it's all about you. God's trying to call him out. It's a teachable moment if Cain doesn't miss it. And so because Cain doesn't ask that question, then God has to start asking questions. Why are you angry? Why are you downcast? God starts to feed into this and to draw him out. Why are you angry? Well, ask yourself for a moment, how do you think God felt when Adam and Eve failed? Do you think God felt rejected? Not just disappointment. He gave them absolutely everything. Everything, and it still wasn't enough. I've done everything for you. How many of you are parents? And you think you've done at least within your power, and we're not perfect, so we get it, but you feel like you're trying to do everything for your children and things still don't work out? Or maybe some of us were that prodigal son. I know that my parents tried to do everything for me, and yet I still acted up and acted out and misbehaved, and some of us have that history. And so it doesn't really seem to matter. But it mattered to God. I think God was heartbroken when Adam and Eve failed. He wanted them to trust him. He wanted them to love him. And so I guess the only question is, what would you do? So here's what happened. Cain, well, I think he was supposed to ask God, why, God? Why are you doing this? But he didn't engage. What did he do instead? He became envious of his brother, and he took his brother Abel's life. He wasn't supposed to do that. The problem wasn't with Abel. The problem was with God. But he didn't ask, why, God? Why are you doing this? Why is my offering not acceptable? Why are you doing this to me? Is there something, God, that you want me to learn and to know? So here's my question for you. Life can be pretty frustrating and disappointing sometimes. And inevitably, when we get hurt, we respond with anger. It's our first emotional reaction. It's the gateway is anger to all the other emotions. Wow, that really hurt. Yeah, but sometimes we cover that over, or the first reaction is a hot one of temperament. We get angry first. So it's not uncommon. And God wants Cain to know, you know, this is going to happen to everybody. Life is going to have disappointments. Sin is crouching at the door. It's there, and you need to be equipped to deal with it. You know, I worked with a gentleman some years ago, and we acted as accountability partners for one another. And we gave each other permission to ask some very hard questions. And one of the questions that we would ask each other as we would meet every week was this one: what's really making you angry? The assumption is that every one of us gets angry. William, you never get angry, right? Okay, I didn't think so. Let me go ask Drayton. Does he ever? Okay. Michael, you never get angry, do you? Gail never upsets you ever, right? She's just the most incredible loving, right? Only one right answer here. See, but he's not telling the truth now, so he's still in trouble. All right. That's fair. I think God wants us all to anticipate that when things happen that we don't like. And Bernie, I'm not sure that God is fair. Actually, I think God is more than fair. I'm glad that he's not fair because he also gives us grace. He gives us not what we deserve, but what we don't deserve. He gives us mercy, forgiveness, love, grace when we don't deserve it. And he even does that for Cain, but we're not quite there yet. He even does something pretty special and pretty powerful for Cain. But I think God was just setting Cain up so he could illustrate Cain. And he tells him, you know, sin is crouching at the door, and it's like a ravenous wolf. It hungers for you. It lusts after you, and it will devour you. You must master it. If you give in, if you succumb, you'll be ruined. And that's unfortunately exactly what happened to Cain. And so God had no choice. After Cain took it out on Abel, he was supposed to push back on God. I wonder for just a second, just an aside here, I wonder if Cain thought he was making up for Adam and Eve. I just wonder if he thought, you know, God, you didn't treat my parents fairly, Adam and Eve. You know, they had one shot. You created that garden. You set that dangerous tree in there. And, you know, you evicted them for that? Why did you do that? And I wonder if, as a son, he wondered it was just a little protective. Like, and he was angry. I wonder, why did you do that, God? But he never asked. He didn't ask for himself either. And so that's when things kick in. Cain had an opportunity, but he didn't take it. We always have a choice. And you see, that's what's so powerful about this God. He always respects human freedom. He gives us autonomy to make our own choices, but he hopes for us to respond in love. He's given us everything that we need, and he's saying, watch out for sin. I will protect you. You just need to know that there's a choice. Anger will happen because bad things happen to people. Difficult and harsh things, and you need to be equipped to deal with that, your anger, when it erupts in your life. You need to have a plan to deal with anger. Call it anger management 101. And unfortunately, Cain, he takes it out on Abel. And at that point, the rest of the story unfolds. As it spins out, there's a punishment, and God has no choice but to act the punishment, which has consequences, and he has to send Cain off into the wilderness. I think that's probably because he didn't want Cain's action to infect others. And so, unfortunately, God also lost touch with Cain. I really believe that God absolutely loved Cain. And when Cain said, but God, even though he didn't show remorse for what he had done, when he said, but God, I'm going to be cut off. I'm going to be cut off. I will lose your face as well. I just have to believe that that softened God's heart. That God's like, yeah, you're right. No, okay, you're going to be a vagabond. You will wander. But he said, nobody's going to kill you, Cain. I'm not going to let, to the best of my ability, we'll put a mark on you. That won't happen. Again, God respects human freedom. Somebody else may attack and kill Cain, which is what happened. But God was going to make, to do his best to make sure that it didn't happen. God never stopped caring about Cain and never stopped loving him. At least that's how I read the story. I think God was only looking for the best, trying to prepare Cain to deal with things, to warn Cain about what could happen. That sin is real. It's just beyond the door. And you must overcome it. You must learn how to deal with temptation, with disappointment, with adversity, with judgment. You have to know how to deal with your own anger on the inside. That God is all about protecting, preserving, and giving life. You know, I was reading a story about a pastor who was doing a funeral. And the husband of this elderly woman came over after the funeral was over, and he pulled the pastor aside, and he said, could I talk with you for just a moment? And he told the pastor a story. He said, I've never told my wife this, but I need to tell you now. He said, in World War II, we were under fire. And he said, a mortar round came in, and there was a tremendous explosion. And he said, after I regained my senses, I looked around. I wasn't wounded, but my buddy was wounded. And said that his whole abdomen had been opened up. His bowels were gushing out, and he was crying out in pain. And he said to me, he said, I'm dying. Please take my life. Tell me the pain is too great to bear. And the man said, I didn't want to do it, but I killed him. Do you think God can forgive me? Am I my brother's keeper? Are you your sister's keeper? Let's pray.